So Ben is back, and I thought it would be interesting to have him on because I was wondering if Ben, if you had given up anything for Lent this year. I'm not even sure that you're of a denomination. I don't know who celebrate or not celebrates, participates in Lent. I thought it was only a Catholic thing, but I'm, you know, my wife is Christian, and she observes Lent. Did you give up anything, or do you use this 40-day period for that?
I added in actually. So I really hate cardio. Like I like weights, I like sports, like cardio in that context is fine, but I just I've never been big on just like the steady state cardio for the sake. I just get bored really easily.
So you added something for Lent.
Yeah. I mean, I would do like sprints, like that kind of thing, but just that's, you know, just short bursts of energy. So I did add in cardio to mortify the flesh. So it's like walking or running on an incline, you know, until my heart rate is in like the 160 zone.
Oh
And then
man.
just staying there for 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah, definitely. I gave up essentially snacking, which is really hard. Like, and it's weird, you know, it's not necessarily any particular food. Definitely no, my absolute Achilles heel is like chips, kettle chips, that type of thing. Anything where I can like eat something and then go into an alternate dimension and then all of a sudden be touching the bottom of an empty bag.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. I just had to get rid of chips from my house entirely. Like, I just can't have them around because it's like one of those late night things. I'd be out like craving the salt, but I think it's because you're just like reaching in a bag. It's like you're reaching into like the black box from Dune, you know, the black box of pain, but then pulling out a delicious little treat.
Oh,
And
salt and vinegar in the black box.
From the five to the six, we be in the mix with that rare candy paint job on the whip. I need food for the kids, money for the rent. Fuck a lockdown, baby, I can't do that shit. And I'll never vote, cause I'm fucking broke. And either way, I know the police ain't gonna leave me alone. On a plane by the visit, Glenn Rockney. Crypto told me I should bring the Glock with me. So I packed up my piece and I'm sliding. Cause we might get caught up in a riot. Middle finger Trump, middle finger Biden. Fuck a left, fuck a right, is you riding? We love to see it, dudes rocking. Ain't no politics, baby, we just talking. From the birds to the bricks, we be in the mix with that rare candy paint job on the whip. Who you with?
Like the notions of quantity, just they don't really apply. Because it's not like like when you cook for yourself, right? There's like a fixed amount of food. It seems like the chip bag is just like this never-ending thing until it does end, and then you've realized that you've polished off like an entire bag of tortilla chips or potato chips.
You know, because like women have the walk of shame, which is something completely different. But I think that's kind of our walk of shame is when you hit the bottom of the kettle chip bag, like or whatever. I
Well,
know.
I got into the pork rinds from Epic.
What? Oh yeah,
Epic
I know.
Bread.
I know the. I know
So it's
it.
like, okay, I'll mindlessly eat them, but I really need a, you know, it takes a lot to balance out the amount of lean muscle tissue that I eat every day. So,
Yeah.
you know, the glycine in the pork rinds is really good for that. And, you know, it's then at least I feel like when I eat an entire bag of pork rinds, it's like, well, I've been healthy today, right?
Yeah, well, that's one way to put it. Because I did it in the like, because I, for a while, I was like, you know, I have like, you know, certain. I think most of the world has some sort of digestive issue that if they're eating just whatever, whenever, like for the most part, you're gonna with whatever's in our food, what microplastics, and you insert what poor diet, lack of exercise. Like for me, if I'm not eating right, I completely like my gut goes to hell. Like I have excess weight, bloating a little bit, and I was kind of like using it as a time because I was gonna be like try to find workarounds. Like I love salami. I can eat. That's another one where I can eat like even the Costco pack that doesn't even last that long with me. I can just eat it constantly, constantly, constantly. But I remember like thinking like, well, am I gonna leave myself one snack? And I'm like, this is for Jesus. You know what I mean? Like Jesus walked through the desert. Like, am I going to be like, well, I should be able to have salami, you know, like as like a, like a, like a lawyer tactic, like some Grisham novel or something. Like, I'm just bargaining. I'm like, nah, I got to go hard this year. And it's been tough, but I lost like 7 pounds. Cause I'm trying to get thin. I'm trying to be skinny.
Yeah. I hit 230. So I'm kind of, and I mean, that's part of why I added in the cardio is like, okay, I should cut a little bit. I've been bulking for 3 years, you know, like it's time to.
For reference, Ben is almost 7 feet tall, for reference, guys. So the 230 might hit a little different if you don't know Ben. Yeah. He's,
hey, about the what is, you know, you're talking about like what might be causing it, like what makes everything kind of go haywire if you're not eating really clean. There's an article in Palladium from, I think, like December 2022, called "Our Farm Antibiotics Destroying Our Health." Really interesting. Presents a compelling case that antibiotics used in livestock rearing, are, you know, not only making the animals sicker by disrupting their own gut microbiomes, you know, and then that has an effect on whether it's the milk, whether it's the meat, whatever else. But that the antibiotics are themselves getting into our food. And so that when we're eating just like our standard American diet, like antibiotics are in that. And that's what is behind a lot of the gut problems and also like mental health problems.
Agreed. Because it's one
like,
and the same.
Yeah. Like I took, I had a tick bite, last fall, and I took like the doxycycline as I think it was like 3 days of it or something that it's used to like prevent you from getting Lyme's disease if the tick happened to be Lyme. And I didn't get the tick tested, but there's a lot of Lyme disease in the woods where I live, so I just didn't want to deal with a ordeal with that. I mean, I knew that my mutuals would never let me live it down if I became a chronic Lyme person. So
it's bad. I think about that often when I put things on the internet. I'm like, God, dude, I can't get any of the shit I'm railing against. Like, if I get any, you almost become a hypochondriac at that point. Yeah, we're gonna get you right back to the episode, but I just wanted to let you guys know of a few other things we offer at Rare Candy Industries. We have a Substack with free and paid subscription options. Free subscribers get access to all written content. That includes Bob's Red Pill. That's the best thing going on the internet right now. Trust me. Paid subscribers get full access to our premium episode feed. And that's just every episode we don't necessarily want to share with the general public, if you know what I'm saying. Again, that's rarecandy.substack.com. We also have merch. That link's a little long for me to say right now, but go to the description, go to our merch store, and find a shirt that's right for you. We have Rare Candy shirts, Dr. Bronner soap label shirts, Reishi mushroom shirts, all types of stuff there. Check it out. There's got to be something for you. And lastly, check us out on social media. On Instagram, we're Rare Candy Pod, but on Twitter, we're at Rare Candy Pod 1. All right, enough of that. Let's get you back into the episode.
It's like if I get long COVID, it's so over, man.
Well, it would give you enough time. I mean, you might be too tired to do so, but you're amazing. You don't even have to say what it is. I know what it is, and like three other people know what it is. Your long COVID fiction is my favorite writing that's ever existed. Look, again, it's graphic, but it's heart. I think of a certain journalist that wears a mask to debate another journalist, you know, or another. I think of that.
I think she would like it. I mean, that is a target audience. Oh, I could,
yeah.
There's this really left wing bookshop in Los Feliz, down in LA, and I could imagine myself giving a reading there. You know, just having like the feminists gathered around and their doubled N95s, just reading the long COVID erotica.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know,
I might publish it someday eventually. I really feel inspired getting into that genre. It's like,
dude, I just opened up the message and I was like, oh my God. Like, it came from you. I'm not even sure you sat down and wrote it. Like, it just appeared. And it was amazing. I mean, it was truly like, you know, it was like the Phantom Thread, but it was like Phantom Thread perhaps, you know, a little bit of, you know, just classic Munchausen's kind of thing. But it was like a true love, like a true love. I felt the love there. You know what I mean? And that, yeah, it was great. It was just, you know, you were trying to make somebody better, but not too much better. Because if they, you know, the relationship hinges on the long COVID. So quite interesting. So
have you read Tinder is the Night?
No.
By F. Scott Fitzgerald.
I haven't. I know exactly what it is, but no.
That's a great novel. Mm-hmm.
Tinder is the Night.
Yeah, that's what I thought you said at first. But yes, Tinder is the Night. F. Scott Fitzgerald, Pride of Minnesota. Yeah,
without giving too much away, it's like a doctor falls in love with and runs off with his psychiatric patient in like 1920s French Riviera.
Yeah.
You know, that age of just Americans going to Europe and being these debauched playboys. And yeah, great story.
You know, didn't old F. Scott didn't he have kind of a crazy broad that kind of held him down for a while? Or not held him down. It almost felt like he had like a lady that drove him kind of crazy. I mean, what author doesn't, right? But like, I thought he had, so he might have been coming from somewhere, kind of somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, there was some really crazy stuff that happened. Zelda Fitzgerald.
Zelda. Legend of Zelda. Mm-hmm.
I mean, she had schizophrenia. And then, like, later on they said she also was bipolar.
Mm. Maybe she just had long COVID.
She had long influenza. I think it happened.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Long. Yeah, she had. Like, I mean, she had like, you know, in her defense, she had also went through what the mental health treatments were in those days.
100%.
Which were like, you know, years of electroshock therapy, insulin shock treatments. You know, and when she died, really tragically too. Like, she died in a fire.
Damn.
It was while she was locked in a room. And Highland Hospital in Asheville, North Carolina. It was a mental institution. And so then a follow-up investigation found that, like, there's a chance that the fire was actually arsoned. Arson. And, like, she was, you know, targeted or whatever. So I don't, maybe it was one of her husband's fans trying to avenge him because, you know, she's widely blamed for his death
and his alcohol. I mean, he was an alcoholic, right? Yeah, he was pretty big time with that. Yeah. But you know, it's this time of year. It's California season. I mean, I think the last time you came on, it was around this time last year. We talked about John Steinbeck. That was a wonderful episode. It's the 4-year anniversary of Rare Candy that happened on Sunday. So that was wonderful. And I was looking back, I was like, when's the first time Ben came on? It's been 2 years. It's been 2 years. Yeah. Flew by and, covering Dissolving Illusions, you know, it was, a lot of crazy stuff, but I always, for some reason, like, you're not like, you haven't lived in California your whole life. But when I think of California, I'm like, Ben, you know what I mean? For the show, like, it's just, he understands California. And what I was, you know, the first thing I wanted to talk about today is Gavin Newsom. He might have gone back on this since it's happened, but Panera Bread was exempt from California's $20 minimum wage law after the owner of Panera donated to Governor Newsom. Do we know if it was a money donation or is he just charged up on lemonade? Gavin Newsom, because I could absolutely
I think it's the lemonade. I think it's the charged lemonade. I think Newsom is fiending for it.
Oh, if there was ever a guy to be charged up all day off lemonade, like, yeah, it's him. Yeah, there's just no way. So I guess the idea is he's trying to, I'm like, how much did he give? I'm like truly trying to see. Like, it doesn't say like an amount, but yeah, that is kind of interesting. Now, Ben, you've had some you know, I don't want to shit on the service industry, but you have some like Chipotle hacks that you went viral for, which I found extremely interesting. I'm more of a Whole Foods burrito bar guy. I know it's on brand, haha, California guy, but like I have my hacks there. But they push a hard line at the Whole Foods ever since the Amazon merger. Those ladies there, they make Dust Bowl burritos,
yeah,
and shit. They're just, it's not
well, the same. it's Yeah, the Chipotle thing, it's kind of interesting because it's not even like I set out to, like, I don't even think of it as a hack. It's more of like a subconscious habit of, I mean, I've just been the past few years, and I'm a longtime Chipotle guy, love my slot balls. Mm-hmm. But over the past few years, I've just been subjected to a lot of social aggression by Chipotle employees. And one of them being that when they automatically will put my food in a to-go container, because after COVID, they started doing that to discourage people from sitting down inside. It's like someone at corporate got a hold of that book on how to like nudge people, you know, yeah. Like not make things explicit, but just do things in a way that, I don't know. It's just like, it's not that big of a deal to take the aluminum lid off, but I don't like that the guacamole sticks to the bottom of the lid. Mm. And I would have to like take a fork and just clean it off. And then it's just, to me, it's just a lot. At that point, I don't even want to eat in the restaurant. I've lost my appetite because you've made me do this. So it does like, I don't know. It's this weird pressure thing that it does like pressure you to just like take it home and, you know, eat it like by yourself at your kitchen table, you know, while you're dry. That's, I think, what Chipotle wants you to do with this. So that's one part of it. The other thing is like, if I would tell the employees up front, that I was getting like a double steak bowl or double chicken bowl or, you know, one scoop of steak, one right. scoop of barbacoa, whatever, that if I told them up front what I wanted, the double portion was like barely above the normal.
Right. Yeah. They skipped the first one.
And I noticed too that like if I had just like ordered the bowl regular and then decided, okay, I want a little extra meat, they would usually just give more. It would be like a double scoop almost just with the extra amount. And then if I had said double, then they would really, you know, really load it up. So it just developed into this kind of thing that I was just, there was just this tension. Like when you tell them like a little bit of rice and they give you like an entire, like they fill up the bowl full of rice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just things like that. Just, you can tell that they really try to, get as much filler in there as possible and put like as few of the, you know, more valuable ingredients, as possible onto the bowl. So it's like you're constantly trying to outfox these people. And then there's the other issue, which is that Chipotle employees never can remember more than two ingredients at any one time.
Yeah. So, you can't do it. And I'm going to have beans, lettuce, and, you know,
you can't do like, I want pico de gallo, corn, sour cream, cheese, guac.
Oh, right. Yeah. No.
That would short circuit anyone. And sometimes I tried, you know, I want the pico de gallo, corn, and sour cream. And they do the pico de gallo, they do the corn, and then looks up and likes lettuce. And it's like, I never want lettuce. But yeah, that's
no, the lettuce is I will say the lettuce, I think companies order too much lettuce all the time. And they're always just like, try to off this like it's bad weed. Like they're like, try to sell the get the lettuce out of here. And yeah. So I think they play dumb at that part, but I see what you're saying. Like they're all like that, like at all of these slot bars, you know what I mean? Like they're always, you guys go, I'm trying to like let them put their head down and work. Cause that's how I like to work when I would work those type of jobs. Like I was kind of like, all right, boom, 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 boom. Maybe one question and then like on to the next one. But I do think there is like this like Yelp culture now where like, I think everybody's so scared to make a mistake that they suck. You know, like,
yeah, they don't. Like, they're not in a natural flow. They're in this like high stress state, I guess. So,
yeah, it definitely seems like the case. But you know, you talked about another thing about California too. Is you had text me something about John Steinbeck's son and his paranormal experience in the Big Sur Mountains. I'd like to hear about this. I know a little bit, but I'd like to hear it. What you've uncovered about it.
Oh, the Dark Watchers.
I really want to know about the Dark Watchers. I know his mom. They his mom, Steinbeck's from the Central Coast. His mom had seen them for a long time. She would leave like food out, and she would notice that it wasn't like when she'd go back, that it's not like everything was just tilted over on its side like an animal got to it. It was like a human went in there and grabbed something and just what they needed and walked away. But his son wrote something about it, right? Kind of like a coffee table book or something.
Yeah,
like,
well, one guy did the illustrations, and his son wrote kind of a history and some of his own experiences down around Big Sur.
Mm-hmm.
And I think his son's name's Thomas Steinbeck.
I believe so, yeah.
And I don't know, if you were to search that with like the Dark Watchers, it would probably bring it up. I got like a Goodwill San Francisco copy for
$40. Yeah, In Search of the Dark Watchers. The book. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but the paintings are cool. Yeah, they're kind of this impressionistic style. But yeah, I mean, it's like these dark human-like creatures who stand on the hills, ridges, and peaks of, I think it's the Santa Lucia Mountains. Mm-hmm. Lucia Mountains in California.
Yep.
And you know, they just watch, right? Like, they're not aggressive, they're not chasing people or whatever, but it is kind of spooky. It's like these and they've been mentioned by so many people. I mean, the legends go back to the Indian days, but like the poet, one of my favorite poets, he's like, to me, he's like the American poet up there with Frost. Robinson Jeffers.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote about them. Said like they were forms that look human, but certainly are not human. Yeah. It also gets a mention in Steinbeck's short story Flight.
Yep.
I think like about the Mexican kid who I don't know, gets into a bar fight in town, kills somebody.
That's a great story too. That's a great story. That's right. That's right. When he's kind of fleeing everything after he's done what he did, and he's like alone, kind of like Blood Meridian style in the mountains. Like, it's pretty sick. Yeah, that's right. It is in there. Damn.
It's the thing about California that's, you know, so interesting to me is like in terms of geography, it is one of the most underexplored states in the lower 48, I think.
Oh, without question.
Like, everyone just goes, and you know, John Didion wrote about this, said that people say they've been to California, but California is not a 5-hour flight from New York to, you know, Rodeo Drive or San Francisco. Like, California is somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, that's why Central Coast connects those two things. That's why it's so cool. Like, it connects to completely different, like, these cities would not exist in the same state other than California. San Francisco and LA, like, coexist, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely different cities, you know, culturally, socially, economically, even climates. Just you could hardly be further apart.
Yeah.
But I was in San Diego County in January. I took my dad out there. We drove to Winter Haven, California,
mm-hmm.
Which is just across the border from, well, it's across the Arizona border from Yuma, and it's across the Mexico border from a place called Los Algodones, which is Molar City is what a lot of Americans call it. There's like 800 dental offices there. It's like this small city that is just nothing but doctors and stuff. And there's like stem cell clinics and all this kind of thing. And a lot of Americans go there. Like, they'll stay at the Indian casino just on the
mm-hmm.
American side of the border and just like walk down into Mexico. A lot of Americans go because it's like, not only is it much more affordable than American healthcare, but the quality of healthcare that you get, like the treatment, the service, and, you know, doctors that seem to know what they're doing, right? You know, so I went in with my dad, his appointment, they did the platelet-rich plasma treatment where they like pump some blood out, spin it in a centrifuge, get the plasma, and then inject that near joints where, you know, you're having like disc degeneration.
Yeah.
gives the area mitochondrial boost, so it does help in wound healing and stuff. I researched it out pretty well and think it's pretty well supported. But then also just, like the doctor's assessment and all, she just did a very thorough job, very sensible, all of that. And, you know, pay out of pocket, it was like maybe a quarter of what it would be in the States, and it would be hard to get that PRP in the States in that particular medical condition. Cause, you know, one thing is like Medicare reimbursement. The other thing is like the threshold for malpractice or whatever is a little higher. So, you know, a lot of doctors are actually overly cautious with it. And you know, more so than they really need to be. So anyway, we did that, but then drove back to driving back to the city in San Diego, went to one of the most strange places I think I've seen in the United States. Let me see. I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's near Winter Haven, but it's this town that has a population of two people.
Oh.
Felicity, California.
Whoa.
Two people. The guy who invented skydiving, a Frenchman.
Oh, sick.
And his wife. Do a Google image real quick.
Okay.
Felicity, CA.
I want to go. I'm going to San Diego this year. I might have to go California. Okay. Yeah. No.
The official center of the world.
Whoa, what is this monument? So what are these monuments and like buildings? What the fuck, dude? These are sick.
Yeah, there's a pyramid, right? And it's like the official center point of the world. There's like this thing, and they ask you to stand on it and make a like intention or something, right? There's also like a statue of the hand of God from the Michelangelo painting.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like pointing up. And you know, it's just all in line, laid out like geometrical patterns. And so opposite the pyramid is a church that sits on top of this massive artificial hill, right? So it's like flat desert, but they built this hill that's like, I don't know, 150 to 200 feet tall. You know, you got a few long flights of stairs to get up. It's because there was an old California law that said that in every California town, the church had to be the highest point in the town.
Oh, interesting. That makes sense.
And so this town, like where they were building this town, was completely flat. So, yeah, it's this guy, Jacques André Estelle. And also they have these, granite, you know, things laid out. They're like these little walls, but they're wedge shaped. I mean, they actually look like the things that they use in cities to like keep trucks from driving up with bombs, like to the Capitol or something. Like those big barriers.
Wow.
But it's etched in granite, the history of the world. So there's like the history of California, there's history of like Western civilization, history, you know, some wars in there, all of that. And you know, it's meant to be like this enduring like monument to human history. And there was these two Zoomer girls who were like manning the gift shop and doing the tours. One of them had like, you know, like the purple highlighted hair. She looked like she should be working in a weed dispensary. She probably did at night. And it was just like bouncing around, and it was like, you know, both of them were really nice, but you just like got the feeling that it was like there were just some very culty vibes going on.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Looks
you like know, you're just like wondering like what happens here when the public's not allowed in. There's a section of the original staircase for the Eiffel Tower. So yeah, I mean, just, you know, very, very interesting place to visit. And it's just on the side of the interstate there.
Yeah, and he was, Jacques André Estelle was a French investment banker, so you can definitely see why he was able to get some pieces of you know, historical artifacts and put them in there. But like that's the type of shit I want investment bankers to do. Go invent skydiving.
Like, yeah, that's, yeah, exactly. Or like build this just insane, completely unique, like weird thing in the desert. You know, that is just so much cooler than, you know, I don't know, whatever Peter Thiel does with his money.
Exactly. And like, you know what? He gives us a little bit of money. He gives us a little bit of money, but that's okay. That's all right. It's all right. Yeah. But no, exactly.
Yeah. Imagine funding podcasts instead of building like your big
pyramid. Beta. No, absolutely.
The point of a podcast is to come up with the money to build your own like occult site out in the desert, right?
RC University, Ben would be a huge part of this, but like, I love what he's doing there. More trees, just for me personally. I need more trees. Desert, so we'd probably do it in the you know, a nice like.
Like if I was a billionaire, I'd create like an Esalen Institute type thing, you know, somewhere else in California, and I would just have my own programming there.
Yeah, because some guy look. What's his face? Epstein's Island. It kind of threw off. It kind of thwarted the make a bunch of money and build a sick ass like place. Like a lot of people now are like, well, I don't want to get accused of like if I build something super sick, somebody's just gonna say I'm doing Epstein stuff there. But I say we got pushed through that stereotype. And if we make a bunch of money, we got to do that.
Yeah, and this is in Imperial County, so so it's like this corner. Little corner of California, and it's just so far from the rest of California or anything that like most Americans would identify as having anything to do with California. And it's like 3 hours from San Diego, inland. And you know, for that corner of California, which is a really like geographically is a big swath.
Yeah,
it's just known as like San Diego, and then like. You know, some people might know Temecula or some of these other places.
Yeah.
But I mean, let's be real. Like most people do not know those places unless they've been to Southern California or like have family there or some other reason too. Like these are just like Temecula is not in the national news very much. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's then driving, back like in the direction of San Diego. So back, west, you then go through these massive dunes on either side of the highway. Like you can see Mexico off to your left. And then to your right, there's like these 250 foot sand dunes that tons of people, like mostly rednecks, are out with dune buggies, just, you know, driving over these things and like rolling down all of that. Just everybody, you know, having a great time. It's like, but it looks like Mad Max. It feels like you're in like this Mad Max kind of environment. Because you turn like down some of these county roads and you just have all these custom, really, you know, unusual looking like dune buggies and this kind of stuff. And there's like, you'll see some buses because like people like to get the Volkswagen buses and go down into Baja. And so like there's a border crossing nearby and all that. Yep. And you just, you know, the vibe in that area, it's just, it feels like you're in another time period. Either like a futuristic one or like you're back in the, you know, endless summer days of like hippie Southern California when you just had all these like kind of free spirits and weirdos wandering around. Yeah. So, you know, going up, going through, driving through Imperial County and then like turning off, this was like to go up towards Temecula. So there wasn't any interstates or anything. So we ended up having to drive like 2.5 hours through, straight up desert, just some of the roughest country I've ever been through. And you're just wondering, like, it was an old stagecoach route. And they still have like the way stations along the way. And there's like these really old branch buildings from like a century ago that are still out there. And it's just incredible. Like you see that kind of landscape, but also with every single mountain range you cross, and there's like three of them. Mm-hmm. The climate changes completely. So you go from being like this gravel and brush, like really rough desert with cacti and, you know, this kind of thing, like kind of like Joshua Tree kind of landscape. Yeah. And then you cross, and it's not even a tall mountain. It's like a pretty modest sized mountain. It's almost like a East Coast foothill, you know, like not a big deal at all.
Yeah.
certainly like nothing comparable to some of the mountain ranges that are in California, the really big ones. But you cross one range and like you go from an arid environment to a semi-arid environment, and actually there's some grass. It's not thick, it's not a lot, but it is supporting some cattle. But you know, you can have like, you need like 20 acres to support a cow, you know, so it's like still around. It's, and then you cross another mountain range and suddenly it's like you've arrived in the Garden of Eden, and there's avocado trees and orange groves, and everything is just like much more lush and green. And there's like water standing in the low places in the valley, mm-hmm. from where, you know, it's just captured a lot of rain. And so there's rain shadows that you're kind of experiencing, how like, you know, the coast does get like a really good amount of rain, but every time it comes up next to a mountain, like there's not that many clouds, I guess, that go over the mountains or whatever, something to do with the landscape there. So you get like these rain shadow effects. But yeah, just, you know, wonderful like road trip if you just want to see beautiful, rugged country. But like you're driving for hours with hardly any sign of human life or development or anything like that. And it's wonderful. There's no crowded feeling like there is in the East. In the East, it's like you constantly feel like even if you go out into the country, like if you're, you know, if you were just to go rural, you know, like go buy, I don't know, 20 acres out in the sticks somewhere, there's a good chance that there will be development there in the next 20 years. Like they'll build a subdivision next to you. You know, like your property taxes will go up and all of this. Cause there's a lot of population growth happening in the country, especially from immigration. And it's happening in, you know, places like in these East Coast places that are already pretty dense, because like they're not going and settling, like they're not going and starting their own towns, right? They're like going to be service workers where there's other people. So it's just kind of, to me, it feels like we're just driving up the density of places that are already kind of uncomfortably dense. At least for, you know, the kind of like car forward suburban kind of, it's weird, right? Like when you build the suburbs out and everything is kind of sprawling, and then when that starts to become dense, it just becomes a giant mess. Like it's a planning disaster. Instead of if you try to like build people into towns and then, you know, like I like the old town country city model, you know, because you had like this kind of urban density, but you still had it in these small towns. And that's very, I think, like human centric. Right. Versus like the strip mall and subdivision model that, you know, everything that's been built since like the 1950s has followed.
Right. So that's a good thing that you brought that up there, because recently in the news, there's been measles outbreaks. Now, from you'll see from liberal media outlets, you'll see that, well, it's coming from Florida. And you know what happens in Florida? DeSantis country is taking us back to the, you know, dark ages. And there's just measles and polio everywhere because he didn't. He doesn't really think that the childhood vax schedule should be enforced by all schools and everything. You know, that's the outlet they're going with. Meanwhile, these outbreaks are taking place in fully vaccinated measles populations. But nonetheless, on the right, I get a little frustrated because this is not a battle I want to fight, in a sense where I think there's a real issue that they're going at with, like you said, immigration, just constant influx of new people into places, making it more dense and all that. But a lot of people are taking the bait, and look, whether there's truth to this or not, I still think it's kind of a weird battle to fight. Is the immigrants are bringing measles over and polio and all this, and whether or not that's true, because I've seen some of the right wing kind of, I'm not talking about huge Fox News talking heads, but other people saying, look, the hospitals are being overblown, all the classic terms that we heard in 2020, they're being overrun by measles and diseases that we just don't see much anymore. Now, nowhere do we see that actually measles is fairly treatable with vitamin A. It's not the death sentence that everybody thinks it is. And
I mean, that's the biggest thing is I don't get like what the big deal is.
Right. Like
yeah, read, yeah. You know, you read any, and when I was a kid, I read heavily, like most of what I was reading was like Mark Twain era stuff.
Right.
Like I love that era of American writing.
100%.
And let's face it, like as far as humor goes, like that was kind of humor that, it's great because you can appreciate it as a kid and as an adult. Like mm-hmm. I can go back and read Mark Twain.
Yeah.
Even though I was like reading him when I was like eight, in the, you know, original and all that. And I can go back and I'm just like, wow, this is so great. Excellent. Like this exactly. is so brilliant. Mm-hmm. And so like to me to be able to, to enjoy the same book that I enjoyed as a 7 year old, but see it in a new light. I mean, that's just, you know, it's like a gold digger for me, but like reading a lot of these writers, like Swiss Family Robinson, like a lot of these classics, right? Because I like the style better and the content was cooler. There's like more violence, all this other, you know, like when I was a kid, like what they were writing for kids at that point was already just like liberal propaganda 90s style,
you right? Know?
It was
right,
just yeah. like very, things were watered down. But anyway, you know, like Twain and a lot of others, like they were writing about measles. Like that was a normal thing for kids to get in the books. You know, it's like, you know, Tom or Huck or whoever like had like measles. And, you know, it's like this thing. And it's like, you know, I didn't have measles as a kid. I had chicken pox, but it's like at that time there was just, there wasn't this fear. It wasn't like this terrifying thing. And, you know, certainly like nothing like smallpox or whatever, which people even then had like a pretty kind of blasé outlook towards. And, right. you know, of course, like smallpox was like everything very opportunistic. And that's the same thing with measles. I think it's more of like the fact we're seeing these things, it's more of an evidence that we are becoming a third world country, not as much that we just have like people coming from the third world.
I see. Yeah.
Because like, I'll tell you, like I talk to people who work in social services. One person I know, a good friend of mine, actually is like a claims adjudicator for the state of Florida. You know, does this remote thing basically like has to talk to people who like are on disability or other sort of things and check in on them. And it's pretty horrifying. Like what is going on out there in terms like at the lower socioeconomic rings,
yeah.
People in really dire financial circumstances, people with addiction issues, the kind of thing social workers find on a routine basis. And it's not just immigrant kids. It's right. not just black kids. It's like, there is a definite white underclass where kids are, you know, basically raising themselves or dealing with, you know, mama's got an abusive boyfriend or whatever else. Like there's just a lot of, there's a lot of hard living out there. And that seems to have escalated pretty significantly in the past few years. And the other thing I mentioned about the person who works for the state of Florida that has told me a lot of these stories is the number of young people who have had strokes, cancers, heart attacks, and are now disabled. Like now they're living off of disability, and disability in Florida is not like, it's nothing cushy, you know, it's like $400 a month.
Ugh, it's like unemployment here.
Yeah. It's just like, they're barely making, and they really are making like these decisions of like, you know, medication or food, like uh-huh. this kind of stuff. And, you know, it's just, it's insane. And so much of this stuff that, you know, I think it would have been reported on much more widely, and it was in like previous recessions or time, like in the mid 2000s and this sort of thing, because of the newsroom layoffs and like the fact that the media just doesn't have as broad of an interest in these human interest stories as they used to.
Yeah.
it's like all of this is going on. It's a really dire situation, but it's not really rising into the discourse because like just it's not being reported on. And it's like the COVID stuff, you know, like there was just so many injuries, vaccines, and then like just, you know, from the lockdowns, collateral damage, all of that, that it just, you know, those stories, like they would have been on, you know, I don't know, 60 Minutes or, you know, there would have, like New York Times would send reporters to talk to people, all of this stuff. And there just was this blanket of silence that has fallen over it all. I mean, there's still people like they just won't at this point now. They just won't talk about the vax or won't say it, or they will just acknowledge like, yeah, you know, I got it and I haven't felt the same since.
Oh, it's even people who have no agenda. Like, you know, when you like, I understand when people are like, hey, dude, like, you don't dump all your politics on me over a, like just in a normal conversation. But you'll just hear somebody go like, almost just confide in you and just go like, hey, dude, like, man, it's like, I just don't feel right. And I didn't feel this way before I got it. I got it just for, you know, making my life easier, but now like I just don't feel right. I don't know if it's in my head. And it's like,
I've talked to quite a few people, some that I know it's not in their head because they have like the Whoops or the Garmins, right? They like monitor their heart rates and the before and after, like the heart rate variability and then resting heart rate, like going up 20 beats a minute, you know, just because you got vaccinated, like that's not normal.
All right.
Having a resting heart rate of 80 instead of 60. From the 5 to the 6, we be in the mix. With that vacant paint job on the wheel. I need food for the kids, money for the rent. And I think there's other factors. I mean, it's not just the vaccine, obviously. I mean, this is like a very psychologically stressful time. You know, I think a lot of people have snapped. I think a lot of people's coping mechanisms were not very healthy, and that has led to other issues.
Well, and I guess the reason I definitely find the left's response to the measles thing, and I'm going to get to this Guardian article about Joseph Lodapo, the Florida Surgeon General. But the what I find weird about the right's thing is like, look, people have their opinion about Whitney Webb. I think she's wonderful. She was wonderful on this show. I think she does very thorough work. And but some people kind of think like, you know, not everything lines up like this. Not everything lines up like this. Like, you know, whatever. But she does make a good point that like a lot of this immigration stuff, like it's one thing to want a strong border, but like if you're complaining about disease being brought over, that's just an easy way to have like vax passes. You know what I mean? That's going to be the response if you push that. Like, it's just going to be vax passes. And I don't think you're going to have any more of secure of a border. It's just going to be like, oh, you want to come in the country? All right, boom. You're going to fill out this ballot real fast. Yeah. I'm going to drop this in a box. Don't worry about it. And then here you go. Here's my here's your shot. And then we'll track you with this. That's fine. Don't worry about
it. Yeah, I mean, I don't look. That's the diseases thing. Like, that has been a thing for a very long time. And, you know, to me, it's always just been like you're coming up with excuses. Right. And I don't need to hear excuses. Like, I think it's perfectly legitimate to just say, you know, I don't want the demographic composition of my country to be changed in a way to where like I wouldn't have recognized this as a kid. Something, you know, like, or you could just say, yeah, I think another very legitimate position is to say, look, like, America is good at assimilating people, but it takes time and it has to be like a relatively modest percentage of the entire population. And if you're importing like massive quantities of people, instead of like integrating and assimilating, they will end up forming ghettos. Yeah. And you basically have the experience of like Europe, which is a nightmare.
And what's the demand, right? Like people always talk about, well, you know, Ellis Island and all that stuff. It's like, well, there was a demand for industrialization. Well, however you feel about that. Hey, over here, there's not really a demand for more people. like
this right. No, it's like it's just it's now like entirely justified on humanitarian grounds.
It's guilt.
And then also, yeah. I mean, the point where it I guess matters, like maybe from a labor perspective, I'm just like, look, I mean, there is a problem. Like we do have a issue with labor, but you're much better off like solving that problem by, all right, let's like either invest in developing our own labor or let's, I don't know, kick people off welfare. Like make people work.
It's a thing. I mean, it's not something I want to do, but it's like what, like there, yeah. there are things you can.
I mean, I was at a vineyard in Italy a couple of years ago and met some of their pickers. They're out picking grapes in the fields.
Yeah.
One guy was a doctor from Milan. He was like there on his break working. And I just got this idea. I was like, we should have like forced labor of doctors and nurses in the fields for like a couple months out of the year. Mm-hmm. Because I think them being in this artificial sterile environment under fluorescent lights all day.
There you go.
Like with the circadian rhythms and all. I just don't think that people can live like that year round and not end up becoming like these deranged freaks that we see proliferating mm-hmm. through the medical industry. And so what we need is to get these people like out in the fields, you know, basically like wearing just enough clothes to not be indecent and just getting flooded with sunlight. And yeah, I mean, I think we'd have much better doctors. They would be smarter. They would be healthier. That's one way we could solve the labor problem is just, and like university administrators, you know, like I want university administrators out there, like scrubbing toilets, like out behind a county fair, nacho stand,
undercover boss,
just find like the most filthy, demeaning manual labor job possible, yeah. And like have the university presidents out there doing the work so that's like I said, like, you know, I'm not really a right winger. I'm kind of a Maoist in some respects. It's just I'm not going to do like the Jackson Hinkle MAGA communism thing. I think we have a good American precedent. It's like press gangs, you know, like you just keep put on the I mean, that's what would happen. That's what used to happen in Florida. Steinbeck wrote about this in East of Eden. Like his main character, Adam Trask, got picked up for like vagrancy in some town in Florida and like was working on a chain gang for 9 months or so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just there's creative solutions to that don't involve, you know, importing massive amounts of people,
right?
But it's like these surges do have to come from the top, though, because like once you're in business, if your competitors are all using illegals,
exactly,
like yeah. You, and it's not even that it's just your competitors doing it. It's like your customers will not pay the price difference.
No, exactly. Well, that's what I mean. You yeah, will go. That,
that's the thing. It's like,
yeah.
People are just like, well, you should just do the right thing, hire Americans, and pass the cost on to your consumer. And I'm just like, have you ever tried to deal with the kind of people who own houses in this country? Yeah. Like, they all have DIY attitudes, right? Yeah. Like, I'll paint this. Like, I don't need to call a professional painter. And then, like the HGTV has ruined life for people who do remodeling and home construction and this kind of stuff. Because
Property Brothers, damn it.
It's like you get all of these people. Like you have to work around, like they want to do as much as possible on the job and just have you do the stuff that is really difficult or technically weird or whatever. And that just makes everything, I think, that much more of a hassle instead of if they just got like one general contractor to do the entire project.
Yeah, that's why it's tough to be like a, you know, I have so many qualities about me that I would consider libertarian, but I'm pretty hard line on like labor where it's like, I'm sorry, unless there's a law that says you cannot just import people who don't understand what a living wage is to work a job. If you the minute you leave that door open, like that's that is the problem with true free enterprise. is like, I can't blame somebody for going, well, if I'm Home Depot and, you know, in Lowe's or whatever, like my competitor's doing this, I got to do it. I have to match that. Like, even whether I want to or not, I have to, because at the end of the day, right, it comes out in the price.
Yeah, it becomes a race to the bottom. Like, there are these, like, irrational things that go on, right? Like, it's not, you know, the market is not, like, infallible. It's because, like, it's made up of human beings, right? And so it's, like, never going to be infallible. And, of course, that means also, like, government is not going to be infallible. I mean, and here's the problem is, like, government is often as corrupt and self-interested as business. And so it becomes this constant issue of, like, which devil is worse? And sometimes it is business, mm-hmm. right? And that's when you do have to, you know, that's when you would want, like, a government to just step in and set, like, a meta rule so that the wrong kind, so that firms aren't competing, like, over the wrong things, right? Which is, like, how to just, like, screw their labor down to, like, the most slave-like conditions, right? Yeah, I think there do need to be the labor standards, like you said. But then at the same time, you've got to watch for the over-regulation, because you then have companies that start using regulations to box out their competitors, like you see with the meat industry.
Yeah.
Right. So you have, like, three main slaughterhouse firms that control almost the entirety of the U.S. Beef market. Right. It's like three companies. And, you know, think of how many ranchers there are in America. Like, how does it make sense that there's, like, three big companies that control over 90% of the meat at the point of sale? It's an insane model, but they're able to do it because they use the federal regulations, a lot of it, like, on safety regulations, right? Like, you have to have, like, this inspected slaughterhouse, right? Like, I can't buy beef from a farmer who just, like, slaughters the cow and then, like, cuts up the meat in his kitchen, which is actually I did buy a cow. It was an illegal transaction. But, you know, it's not something that would happen in a grocery store. So the thing is, like, to get this stuff inspected is you have to have, it's expensive. Sometimes the FDA doesn't even, like, have enough inspectors, right? So they, like, just can't send them out to you or whatever. There's this place I go to get my, high dose vitamin C top ups and this kind of thing. It's like an intravenous, like an IV bar kind of thing. You know, just a nice, Saturday morning with the boys. We go down, we get, stabbed with needles and rehydrated from the night before. But yeah. Last time we were in there, the owner was telling us, that the cost of the IV bags has doubled, and it's because the pharmacy she was using, the FDA didn't have anyone available to go do the inspection, and they had to be inspected in order to sell. And so they got shut down by the government, even though they asked the government to send the person to come inspect their facility, and the government didn't have someone. So it's like they shut down a business. And it's not just, like, you know, the impact to the business and to the employees that work there. It doubled the cost for the entire state, right? Because now there's, like, only one compounding pharmacy that is licensed, and they've raised their rates to deal with the extra demand because now they have all the business for the state. So, like, this one compounding pharmacy gets to serve, like, an entire state, and it's like a legal monopoly because their competitor got shut down because the government just didn't have anyone to send over to inspect their manufacturing facility. Like, it's just, you know, we're in, like, these Atlas Shrugged levels of extreme incompetent management and intervention into the economy. So that kind of thing, like, that like reignites my libertarian streak. And I'm, like, mm-hmm. trying to find, like, a happy middle ground between, you know, not just having like this totally, you know, rapacious form of industrialism versus not having like this insane, like kleptocratic state that we have now, in which just everyone is trying to rob from everyone else. Everyone's trying to use the laws to screw over other people.
Yeah, I agree.
And, you know, everyone wants to get what they can and get out, including the politicians. That's the thing. It's like they're, you know, they're too busy trading stocks. It's like a lot of them know what the country is headed for, and they're trying to make as much money as possible and just get out.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, last thing I want to talk about today is, as I said, the Joseph Lodapo article in The Guardian, which I thought was excellent. Excellent as in bad, but it's just, I love reading the way libtards in The Guardian, which I, to be honest, feels ChatGPT. I'm reading it.
Well, you know, they hit me in The Guardian here recently.
Did they?
Yeah, well, it was through it was a hit piece on IM 1776.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they were talking about, like, they cited me as an example of how, like, they've had writers who have praised dictators, and they cited me for talking about Bukele in a positive light. And then they also said that we praised terrorists, and then I look for their example, and it was an obituary we ran for Ted Kaczynski, who he loves.
Well, I mean, he died.
It's like he was a philosopher, you know. He's like, I don't know. It's like I have the T-shirt I wore for Super Tuesday says "Vote by Mail," and it's the wanted picture for Ted.
That's good. I like that. Yeah, and
anyway, it's go ahead.
No, so I found out about this article. I mean, fuck The Guardian. I mean, I think we can say that much. Feels very ChatGPT reading it. It just, even back in the day, libtards used to be able to actually like write kind of good. So like at least the stuff would kind of.
Well, they actually are using ChatGPT now for a lot of this stuff.
It doesn't shock me at all. Yeah. It has no flow to it whatsoever. It's just things. It's a list of things that happen. And so Seth MacFarlane, MD, Seth MacFarlane, MD, yes, the creator of Family Guy and Ted and all these other things. He was panicking over measles the other day. This is how I found this article. So thanks, Seth, for putting this on the timeline. Measles, a no-joke disease that can lead to severe complications and death, and that none of us have ever had to worry about thanks to vaccines, is back. Brought to you by the anti-vax movement. It's like, dude, you're a talking fucking dog on Family Guy. Shut up. This is not required. It seems to be required of him. And he's always been a guy, like, he's always been this weird agent in my weird presence in society, where he wasn't supposed to be on the flight whatever that hit in the 9/11 or something. Like, well, a lot of weird things happened with him.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, we had a measles outbreak near me after the fall of Afghanistan, or the pullout, when we like brought in a bunch of Afghan refugees that were poorly vetted, not, you know, tested for this stuff. And yeah, they were like, there was like a week or two where people in the area were worried because a lot of these people had measles. Guess what? It never spread. Mm-hmm. And is it because, you know, is it because of the vaccines? No, it was because the people had just came from like refugee camp kind of situations. Like, that's why they were getting sick with the stuff. And guess what? They weren't dying. It wasn't actually that contained. It wasn't a big deal. It just like burned itself out. It was contained. The bigger, you know, and that's like one of the things with immigrants, and like the bigger issue with immigrants and like the health issues is like, yeah, a lot of times they are bringing stuff like, there's a lot more tuberculosis now than there was, that's showing up in hospitals. That's been kept quiet, but it is being managed, and it hasn't like swept into the native population. It's like, do you know why? It's not because of the tuberculosis vaccine, because we don't get that anymore. You can't get the BCG vaccine in the States. You have to like work for a prison or something to even be like considered for it. And I know about it because it's like, it's one of the few that I think is actually like a decent vaccine, not for, not that there's like much risk of tuberculosis, but for some of the other effects. It's a mycobacteria that if you introduce it into the bloodstream, it seems to reprogram your T cells to like stop, you know, attacking your pancreas or whatever. Effective against like several different types of autoimmunity, but it's not a like vaccine, in the conventional sense. Like, it doesn't have any tuberculosis bacteria in it. You don't inject it. It's in the skin. That was there. Ray Pete had some interesting comments about dermal vaccines versus, the typical ones that come in a syringe. Because he was saying that if you put it in the skin, you avoid the kind of systemic reaction that comes from like injecting something into, you know, the muscle or the bloodstream. It's just a scratch at the surface of the skin. And that's more like where your immune system would recognize a pathogen and form, you know, like imprint on the memory cells. And so he was saying, like, that's why those are probably the ones that would pass the cost benefit test. They don't have many side effects because you're not causing like a widespread reaction in the body. There's no like adjuvant. So there's no like aluminum or anything that goes along to create inflammation. But anyway, that aside, we know that like we're not protected because of the tuberculosis vaccine because we don't get it. Like, we're protected. Like, we're not getting the tuberculosis from the immigrants because we live like in sanitary conditions. Like, we're not drinking water that has poop in it.
Read Dissolving Illusions. Yeah. We covered it the first time, Medical Red Pill Volume 1, 2 years ago with Ben Braddock. Read it, guys.
And that's how I feel. That's how I feel about the measles thing, too. Like, none of these measles outbreaks really spread.
Right.
And they're not even spreading, not even in like the, not even, but I'm saying like there are large communities where there's a lot of kids who are unvaccinated, right?
Yeah,
like,
of course.
Churches, you have the Orthodox, a lot of the Orthodox Jews,
Christian scientists,
all of this. And, you know, even when like measles cases pop up sporadically among them, like it doesn't like set, it's not like a tinderbox, it's not a big deal. Like, it's just more stuff for people to fearmonger over.
Yeah.
Like, let me know when smallpox comes back. That's something that you might want to like actually hit.
And like, I'm sorry. I'll see it. Like, I will see it. Like, the things I see, like when I go outside and I work in the street in many different neighborhoods, many different socioeconomic levels, I do see certain things where I go, okay, yeah, that's a real thing. Like, well, I do see that. Now I don't see leprosy in the streets everywhere. Like, I don't see this. I mean, again,
but you know what I see? What? I see mental illness. Oh, I see drug addiction, severe. And it's like, this is stuff I see all the time.
Yeah.
You can't walk, you can't go on the New York subway or walk like anywhere in midtown Manhattan without seeing a health crisis play out. Like, whether it's like opioids or xylazine or whatever it may be, you know, there's like new meth that has people, you know, cracked out of their minds, going schizophrenic, all of this. Like, that is the actual health crisis. And that's the thing. It's like, we don't need to make up something to be concerned about or like to focus public attention on. Like, we don't need to pretend that measles is a problem. Like, we have people who are, you know, are like hearing voices in their head, just like walking down the street constantly, you know, swinging knives around and all that. Like, that's the health problem in this country, is like the just the sheer amount of untreated mental illness, and the fact that treated mental illness, like their treatment methods for it, often just lead to like more of the same. And that's it's like, we have enough legitimate things to be concerned about. We have the, you know, talk about other things. You see like the obesity crisis playing out. Like, you see I saw the other day in the grocery store, like an 8-year-old kid in a mobility scooter because he was so enormously obese. And, you know, like some people, like, I don't know, the reaction to that is this thing of like, either they seem to think it's kind of funny or it's just like, I don't know, put the food down or this or that, but it usually is an indicator of like much deeper problems.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, I think that the way that people, whether it's like trying to affirm that as like, this is okay, like with the body positivity stuff, or with just the, you know, just put the potato chips down kind of thing. Like neither of these things are actually going to land with any of these people. Like it doesn't get at any of.
No, that stuff's for literal, classes. Like that's for like college educated people. That's for like this whole different class. Like all that stuff does not trickle down to.
And it's like the quality of food that's available at the lower rungs, or not just available, but affordable. That's a problem. Like we're poisoning entire generations of Americans with this slop. And it's chemically engineered to be addictive. And then it creates like these cycles with like hormones, neurotransmitters, all of this stuff. And it's like, I say like, it's an addiction and it's not like, you know, I mean, how often is it successful to tell a heroin addict, like just put the needle down, man. Right.
Yeah.
It's like, and I don't think it's even a personal failing most of the time, because like I said, like this stuff is engineered to be this way.
Right.
And you know, this is a case where like you have to have some like daddy has to step in. Like you have to have a benevolent, paternalistic kind of government to say, like, actually we can't put Roundup in the food. We can't we can't put stuff
in ethics. Just ethics. Yeah. I mean
You can't sprinkle fentanyl in the Cheetos to like create a captive class of consumers. Like this is not okay.
And informed consent, like a lot of people like wouldn't vote for that if they knew that's what was happening. Or a lot of people, I'm not vote, I just mean like a lot of people wouldn't support, you know, blue ketchup, you know, in a store if they knew that it wasn't just silly little colored ketchup. Like it's actually like disgusting.
Yeah, like why not even just have like clear labeling laws, right? Yeah,
right, exactly.
Like country of origin laws. Like now we don't have country of origin on beef.
That's crazy.
So, not in a real way. So what happens is if any part of the processing was done in the United States, you can say that the beef is from the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Now I would prefer Argentine beef or actually throughout a lot of Latin America because there's less sprays being used. But you know, when it comes to something like fish, right, like it does make a big difference to me. Like, is this shrimp that was farmed in, I don't know, southern China, or was it farmed in, you know, Norway or something?
What do you care, you racist? Yeah, what do you care? Yeah, exactly. That's really what it's framed as. But you know who's really the fault of all this? Like, dude, all the stuff you're talking about, it's great, but honestly, you just got to blame the quacks and the skeptics, as The Guardian does. I'm just going to read a couple paragraphs of this. This guy, Joseph Ladapa, who I've liked since COVID. I'm not a massive DeSantis for president guy at all. I think Trump's the guy. Trump's got the juice. This is in The Guardian. They're going after DeSantis's Surgeon General guy. The stuff they're accusing him of, I don't even know if it's even true that he said it, but I'm kind of like, hey, based if true. Shortly before Joseph Ladapa was sworn in as Florida's Surgeon General in 2022, The New Yorker ran a short column welcoming the vaccine skeptic doctor to his new role and highlighting his advocacy for the use of leeches in public health. In satire, it was satire, of course, a teasing of the Harvard-educated physician for his unorthodox medical views, which include a steadfast belief that life-saving COVID shots are the work of the devil, and that opening a window is preferred treatment for the inhalation of toxic fumes from gas stoves. They're going after the gas stoves again. But now, with an entirely preventable outbreak of measles spreading across Florida, medical experts are questioning if quackery has really become official health policy in the nation's third most populous state. So then they begin to talk about how Broward County Elementary School has been ravaged by measles, you know, if not, and you know, then if not that, it would just be a mass shooting because they don't have the gun law. Yeah, it's just like, oh god, like, you know, it's just ridiculous. But it's just funny how in all these times, right, you can go outside and you could see somebody through a small business, you could see like a big like metal object size hole in a window, a small business looted, a guy walking around in a hospital gown shitting down his leg. And then you can realize, you can look down at your paycheck, see that 50% was taken out of it. You didn't even keep half the money you made this year, and you don't even own property. And then you can be like, damn, man, I think we need more science. I think we need more consensus medical takes. I think we need, I think we need to follow the Bad Medical Takes Twitter account. Like, I think that's just what we need to do right now. But that's what a lot of people think in this country. That's, when you talk to some people, they still think the quacks are the reason where we are where we are.
Yeah, I mean, they, you know, they blame this on the Florida Surgeon General. They don't get into why Florida has a infectious disease problem kind of in the first place. Like, there's some combinations of demographics, having a very large underclass, a lot of density, and in a kind of tropical environment, right? Like, I think the climate also, it's the only, South Florida is the only like actual tropical area in the lower 48. Because California is warm, but it doesn't have enough like constant rain to maintain that like petri dish quality.
Yeah, true.
So like, you know, before LaDapa was even Surgeon General, like Florida had outbreaks of meningitis. Like they were one of the big states for when monkeypox came around. There's just like there's actually local transmission of malaria, like the first time in the United States in like 20 years or something. Community acquired cases of malaria. It's just, man, there's a lot of swamps. There's a lot of like mosquitoes. There's a lot of like people living at the margins. Mm-hmm. If you watch like a movie like The Florida Project or something, that is describing like a lot of reality. And, you know, this like underclass with a big drug problem living, you know, basically in filth. There's a lot more susceptibility to these unusual diseases there. And it's not the, you know, it's like not the fault of the Surgeon General that that's what he's dealing with. Not even the fault of the governor. Like, you can't fix a problem like that in such a populous state anywhere near overnight. You know, it was a long time coming. It's very structural.
Oh, I remember the Florida Man memes from like the early 2010s. I mean, everybody was, that's what they were.
Yeah, everybody knows like Florida is just, Florida is this frontier. And I love Florida too. I actually love it for it. It's like, it's got this very different, it's this cool blend between like it's the gateway to Latin America. So you get like a little bit of that wildness there, but things are still like way more functional than most of Latin America. But you also get like the Florida rednecks are a really particular type, and they're a lot of fun. I mean, these guys are just, they're wild. You know, like they're going out in the swamps. They'll like catch alligators. They're just like, you go over on the Gulf side of Florida. I went there during COVID and like out in Lee County, Florida. And like, it was just, it was at the peak. It was like the first winter. Right. And we're just in this crowded restaurant, and it just felt so nice to be back around like large group of people. And some tourists came in wearing a mask, and like the hostess, like this lady in her 60s, cussed them out and told them to get the blankety thing off the face if you want to come in here.
Wow.
Like that's you know, that's Florida. And that's the thing too, it's like, you know, I think DeSantis deserves a lot of credit for how he handled COVID. But if he had tried to lock down the state for very long, it wouldn't have worked. You can't lock down the Florida Man.
Yeah.
And that's sort of like throughout the southern states that have large populations of Scots Irish, they never really could do much. Like Virginia, for having a Democrat governor and Democrat administration and all, like by August of, aside from like the mask mandate in schools and a couple of other things, but like the measures were never really as strong as they were in the states just to the north. And a big part of that was just that like you couldn't impose it on most of the state. And actually when you got out of the liberal areas, there were no rules. Like,
yeah,
those schools were by and large never, you know, never enforcing the mask mandates anyway. So, yeah, that's a the Scots-Irish going back to like the Roman times, like they built Hadrian's Wall, like to keep the Scots pinned up in like this northern wildland, right? Like the Romans just couldn't go above a certain latitude northward because the Scots would throw them back.
Hell yeah, that's right, brother. Else.
So it's like that's, you know, like that's where the Roman Empire had to stop. Like the Scots were that psychotic. And then they've been like that through centuries. And they're very independent. You can't tell them what to do. Like they're very stubborn people. Mm-hmm. And that was the thing. That I think that's what saved a big part of the United States during COVID, like especially in the South, is that those kind of people are just, you can't govern them. Yeah, God bless them. And they showed an example, because if you think about it, if it wasn't for states like Georgia and Florida coming out of lockdown, like pretty, you know, they did like 2 weeks and then we're just like, okay, we're done.
Yeah.
Georgia was actually the first, wasn't even Florida, but Brian Kemp, after 2 weeks, he's like, all right, hair salons open again, gyms open. We're not doing anything. Like never did any kind of mass stuff, nothing. And that set the counterexample, because with Sweden, you could say, well, the Swedes are really fit and all of this. And so like, that's why they didn't have to lock down that hard, but we definitely had a lockdown in Georgia. Right. But Georgia came out of lockdown. Like they only did the 2 weeks and they did fine. And then so, you know, so did Florida. So did a lot of these other states. Like they, you know, basically tracked where you would expect them to land in terms of like number of people who had vulnerabilities. But if you look at like California or New York, two states that locked down pretty hard, they had very high mortality rates.
Oh, it was, yeah, exactly. And that's if you believe that. And look, that's, I think we're adjusting some numbers for inflation. There's some laundering happening, of course, but then you have like, yeah.
In New York and New Jersey, the nursing homes were like killing fields.
Exactly.
And a lot of that was iatrogenic. Look, if you tested positive, you wouldn't get the, they wouldn't give you the antibiotic. Mm-hmm. If you tested negative, then they would be like, okay, you have pneumonia, we'll give you the antibiotic. And so it was like the very fact that we had the capability to test for this, you know, and of course the test wasn't great. If there had never been a test developed, there would probably be hundreds of thousands of people that would have survived because they could have just gotten like basic care. Instead, yeah, the people with COVID, they gave them Tylenol, which depletes the glutathione and makes your lung inflammation worse. That was the only thing that they were like, you know, offering those people. And then, you know, not to mention like the numerous people they killed, ventilators and all sorts of other, remdesivir, all these other things. But you know, just saying, like, definitely having like these states like South Carolina and Georgia and all like not do lockdowns really at all, and then for them to just, you know, be totally fine, like that was important to be able to go and make the case like, look, we have to get these other states opened up too.
Yeah, exactly.
That was a very helpful rhetorical thing. Cause like anyone who could see reason could like look at that and see like, okay, yeah, like this is, it's fine. Right. Like we can be, we don't have to like barricade ourselves inside
right
our houses. Just the problem was like, there weren't that many people who you could even make the argument to, like people were that deranged that like, if they were in the pro-lockdown camp, like you couldn't really reason them out of it.
No, and then also, you know, the fact is like they were doing, Florida was attempting to treat all of this stuff too. That's what I mean. Like we frown, so we call treatment quackery. Like, and nobody ever wants anything treated. They just want constant interventions, which are two different things. You know, these.
Yeah, well, they don't believe in cures. I mean, they don't believe in.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you ask a therapist, you know, like, okay, what's the end point? for money and patience. And they're just like, well, what do you mean? Right? It's like, well, how do you get someone to where they don't need to go to therapy anymore? Like you ask your average psychiatrist this question. And they'll just, you know, stare back at you. You know, the eyes will glaze over. Because the idea that you would ever stop going to therapy, it's like anathema, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like, what is the outcome here? Like, what's the win condition? And, you know, there's this thing in the medical field where they're just allergic to the idea of fixing any problem.
Yeah. And a lot of it comes from the millennial. It's like almost like I'm sure there's a coordinated effort for by the pharmaceutical industry, but then there's also like psychologically instilled in the millennials generation, which I'm a part of, is that it's almost like a hyper response to the actually, you know, you can be anything you want in the world. Like just you're this, if you feel like this, you're going to be that. And then you realize when the world smacks you in the face, especially after the 2008 crash and all the stuff that's been happening, till then you kind of realize, you're like, well, I'm not that, like, this is kind of weird. And then you have this guilt because you were taught that, like, instead of just like, oh, I could have been a carpenter, or oh, I could have, you know, gone into engineering or any of this stuff, is a lot of these people felt like these, I need to be this great thing because it's possible for me to be so. And now it's like you have all these people that just hate themselves. I mean, they just hate themselves in an organic way, because sadly, I'm one of those people, and I bounced out of it for a while. But it's still, look, winter is still coming. Sometimes I look over the wall and still see that ugly shadow on the frontier. But I just think that like, yeah. By the way, I was in a store in this kind of ritzy, like, libtard area, they had some nice clothes and cool little, like, knickknacks and stuff, but it was definitely one of those, like, Portlandia-style stores, and I looked up, and I didn't even put two and two together, and I looked up, and there were, like, these white women masked up and everything, and they're looking at these Snoop Dogg cookbooks and stuff like that, like just total, like, 2024 stuff. And then I looked up and I remembered it myself. I was like, oh yeah, the store is called Therapy. It's actually called Therapy. It's kind of on the nose, but nevertheless, here we are. So Ben, last question. Are you still messing with the Repeat forum? Repeat people don't like us very much. There's a couple people that still rock with us, but we were a little mean a little bit. We poked a little too much fun, but that, there was some trouble in paradise, I thought.
The Repeat forum is like, that's been the geopolitical intrigue. That was the big happening of the winter. Is
so they paywalled it? Is that what
it is? It got paywalled. Well, it got taken over by this guy, Charlie, who is saying that people need to follow a super low vitamin A diet to bring about the return of Jesus.
Okay, well,
like basic, yeah, it's like once enough of the followers purge vitamin A from their bodies, like then the conditions for Christ to come back and set up his kingdom on earth will be achieved. Like there'll be enough, like metabolically superb. I don't even get where that's at, because like I think the vitamin A toxicity stuff is mostly hogwash. You know, I think you need vitamin A. I don't just think that. I mean, you just do. It's just a fact.
It treats measles. We know that.
Yeah. That is, yeah, it's just totally imploded. And it used to be a really fun forum because, you know, some threads you would have like very thoughtful, smart people writing about stuff. And then some you would just have like these like insane pharmaceutical addicts, like people who just wanted to try all kinds of new, like,
yeah,
Bulgarian peeing. And then like some people following like a more naturalistic way. And then some people just doing stuff like, okay, you know, I took 50,000 units of vitamin D every day for 6 months, and this is how I got my penis to grow 2/3 of an inch. And just like a lot of crazy people doing experiments on themselves. And, you know, there's good information on there. There was entertainment on there. And then there was just like, you just kind of shake your head and just be like, this person's nuts. But yeah, there's this hostile takeover or whatever, and like you have to, like, the new rules of the forum, like, you can't criticize a monitor, a moderator in any way. Like, it's basically turned into North Korea. Like, it's turned into some fiefdom.
Or Reddit.
And so,
that's true.
Yeah, very true. I mean, man, I had, like, purged that site out of my mind so long. But that did happen on a mass scale, same like every forum.
Crazy, man.
So it's all gone over now to my friend Brad Cullen has set it up, the bioenergetic forum. And so it's it's off to a great start already as a forum. I really like the forum format. It just, there's something like there's a lot of value in Twitter, but the way that like everyone like replies to kind of the same tweet.
Right.
It's not threaded. And I don't know. It's just like, it's the conversations don't really roll out the same way as they do like on a forum. So I think the forum, just the medium of it, like creates something different than you'll find on Twitter.
Yeah.
And you know, and I like having like different styles of platforms and just like layering.
Oh yeah. It's a decentralized, like, you gotta decentralize. I mean, yeah. And just,
and you actually pick up a lot, like kind of, you understand a lot more about like what Marshall McLuhan was talking about. Like the medium is the massage, like how it's not just the content. It's actually the medium of communication itself that shapes a lot. And you can see that in the way that, you know, different platforms have different vibes, right? Instagram has got its own like internal logic, and it's just based off of like the interface, what the functionality is, like what you can do with it and all. So, you know, that's, I think, forums, like they're this great reminder of like how great the old internet was, and you know, they're worth keeping around. And I think there's a lot of good posters on this one.
Excellent. So
Bioenergetics forum.
So the Ben, thank you once again. Surely it won't be the last time, because actually the next time you come on, we're gonna do Inherent Vice, the book and the movie.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That'll be I gotta save that one for summer, because that's just, I mean, that's a summer book, summer book, summer movie. And we're gonna do that. That's on Gain of Fiction. If you're here for the first time, that is on our premium feed on Substack, rarecandy.substack.
I have a little bit of news.
What's that?
I just saw the snowpack in California is at 101%. We are going to have another California summer of no drought confirmed.
Oh yeah.
Two summers in a row, green California, caught it here. It's making its comeback.
We're back. Like, all you gotta do is look at the hills, dude. You look at the hills, you can tell if we're back when you look at the hills. If they're brown and strawy and stuff, but if they're lush and green, everything's gonna go all right. You know, just watch out for weird like shit in the street and stuff. But otherwise,
watch out for the people, the dark watchers on the hills.
Yeah, I think I might have to go see them. I have a feeling they're tight. That's all I'm going
to
say.
I think we all need to go, all three of us. Let's just go down to the Big Sur area.
We got to start out university campground sites. So,
if one of the listeners would like to sponsor a trip for the three of us to go and record live in, just record in Big Sur.
Yeah.
reach out to the show's account and they'll send, they'll let you know where to send them.
Thank you. Esalen Roundtable, like Terrence McKenna in the 80s or something, you know, like a
I would do it. I mean, I that's not it. Like, I think all of us are. That was a fun idea, but I'm like, no, let's do that.
No, we'll do that. Let's. I'm 100% in.
Yeah, we don't need signal for it either. We'll just record it up there, and then like just let and then whatever happens after that, it happens. If you see a dark watcher, come on the pod, dude.
you gotta get a dark watcher on the pod.
Yeah, I know. We're just gonna get some guy like who's just like, yeah, I'm a dark watcher. Like, hell yeah, dude. I'm it's dark and I'm watching, and we're gonna get guys like that. So,
are dark watchers cucks?
Yeah,
exactly. Is there an immigrant angle to this?
Yeah,
we'll ask one.
Mr. Yeah. Darkwatcher, are you a libtard? I have a question for you, sir. But Ben, you are, as you said, you are, is it a contributing editor? I never know the journalist titles for IM1776, but you're very involved in what they do. So please
call it a commissioning editor.
Commissioning editor. Okay. So you're that IM1776. I graduated Ben on Twitter. I'm sure most of these people know where to find you. If you're here for the first time, because you follow everything Ben does. We have a lot of episodes with Ben. Go to back in the archive. They're all great. None of them are like time sensitive. It's not just current event stuff. So all of that is on there. And again, check out the Gainer Fiction program and all of our previous episodes on rarecandy.substack.com. It's not Patreon. It's a Substack, but it is worth it. We turn out a lot of stuff. On that note, guys, we had a safe week.